Welcome to Let's Talk Death, conversations to inform and inspire. Let's Talk Death is being brought to you by Heal Grief, a nonprofit providing the tools and resources to support one's journey with grief. We seek to empower individuals to achieve a healthy post-bereavement growth. Everything we do is inspired by our core belief that no one should ever grieve alone. Let's Talk Death is a series of conversations with some amazing people from various fields. Our goal through these conversations is to normalize, educate, and demystify the taboo around death, dying, and the journey of grief. Hello, welcome to this episode of Let's Talk Death. I'm Fran Solomon.
And I'm Andy McNeil.
And we are thrilled to be your host for these conversations.
Our guest today is Barbara Carnes. A registered nurse, Barbara is an internationally recognized author, speaker, thought leader, and expert on end-of-life care and the dynamics of dying. Barbara was recognized in 2018 as a hospice innovator by the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization and was named the 2015 International Humanitarian Woman of the Year by the World Humanitarian Awards. Barbara's experience as a hospice care provider at the bedside of hundreds of people and as an administrator overseeing the care of thousands led to the 1985 publication of Gone From My Sight, The Dying Experience, affectionately referred to in the industry as the Little Blue Hospice Book. Gone From My Sight has sold over 30 million copies worldwide, is published in 12 languages, and remains the leading resource on the market today, educating families on the signs of approaching death. In 2015, Barbara's film, New Rules for End-of-Life Care, was featured in film festivals worldwide and was the recipient of 10 prestigious film awards. Barbara, we are delighted to have you as a guest on our show.
Oh, thank you. It's really nice to be here. I'm looking forward to a really great conversation.
So, Barbara, before we begin, our audience likes to understand the connection our guests have with their grief experience. Is there a particular experience that you've had in your life that perhaps kind of shaped your work, your career, or just your outlook on death, dying, and grief?
Well, you know, we're going to go back to the 1950s, and I was 16 years old. I was a nurse's aide in a little hospital, and in the 50s, a hospital was kind of like our nursing facilities are today. You know, people were in there for years, and that's how the hospital system was. And there wasn't joint commissions or any regs that really outlined what you could and couldn't do. So here's this innocent, non-worldly little 16-year-old, and the head nurse comes up to me and she says, Barbara, I want you to come sit with a patient. Now, this was not unusual. We didn't have recovery rooms then, and so they'd bring a person out of surgery, and this kid would go in and sit waiting for this person to wake up. So it wasn't unusual. We walk in this room, there's a woman, shades are drawn, lights are out, this woman's in bed, and the head nurse says to me, I want you to come and tell me when she's dead. And she walked out and shut the door. Oh. Now, this is a kid that had never been around anything, not even a pet that died. You know, I didn't know anything except that I was terrified. And I got as far away from that woman as I could possibly get. And I hung onto the wall. And I just watched and listened. And the biggest sound was the beating of my own heart. Well, at some point, I couldn't see her breathing or hear her breathing. So I stayed there and hung onto the wall some more. And finally, I thought, this must be what it's like to be dead. And so I walked out and I got the head nurse and I said, I think she's dead. And indeed, she was. That was my first experience with death. And it wasn't until nursing school and nurses training that I was told to go in and wash a woman that had died. That was the next death encounter. And I really disliked nursing. And I thought, I really should have never been a nurse. I should have been a social worker. But I finished nursing school, graduated, passed my boards, and got married. And it wasn't until in the 70s, when I'm in my 30s, that I thought, what do I want to be when I grow up? And with that, hospice was just coming to this country. The philosophy was just arriving. And I thought, this is something I could do. And why I thought, other than that I had a solid belief in what I thought life and death was all about and living. Now, at my age and where I am 40-some years later, having devoted all those years to end of life, it's why I'm on the planet. It all came together.
Wow. Well, you know, hearing you tell that, I had a professor in college that said to a bunch of us young college students who we didn't know what we were going to do. He said, you won't know until you're much older and you look back, and then you'll know what it was you were supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
That's just powerful. To me, it's a very powerful testament.
It is.
Maybe think of that when you said that idea of looking back and knowing, you know what? Now I know. That's why I was on the planet.
Yeah, we expect our 18-year-olds to go off to college and know what they want. You got to be 30, 40, sometimes even 50 when you figure out what you're here for.
Yeah, and how many times, Barbara, does life just kind of choose us, too? You know, you find yourself confronted with something. I mean, you didn't ask to go in the room as a 16-year-old with the person who was dying. It's just sort of, you know, you found yourself in there with that. And that person, and I don't know, sometimes I think life kind of picks us, whether we choose it or not. But
what I find interesting is that it was such a traumatic event for you as that young woman in that room, and your second experience with someone who has died was also a very traumatic event, that it drew you in to really be very close with what your experience. I mean, just that, I find that very interesting. Almost as if it maybe was a quest to change, that something different had to be done.
When Elizabeth Kubler-Ross brought dying to the forefront, there was something in her that and what she was saying that resonated with me. Having been that 16-year-old, having been in nursing school and seeing how those people that were dying were put in a private room at the end of the hall and that everyone stayed away from them because they didn't know what to do. How we totally didn't know how to handle dying. And I think that somewhere in my subconscious, that stuck. And when Elizabeth was coming forward, at the same time, Cicely Saunders in England was talking about a different way of taking care of people that were dying. And she was offering a philosophy of let's help them live the best they can within the confines that their body and disease has put them in. And when that came to this country about the same time, I spent a week in one of Elizabeth's workshops to learn how to take care of people who were dying. And what she said was, you got to take care of yourself first. You have to look at your own black bunnies and figure out who you are before you can help someone else. That was the biggest gift she gave me. And then with Cicely Saunders saying, let's help people live until they're not, those two things coming together at the same time I think, awoke that little seed that was asleep within me and said, yeah, okay, this makes more sense, the hospice philosophy, so that no other little girls have to sit in a room and come tell, say, when someone's dead and not know what to do.
Let's Talk Death is being brought to you by Heal Grief, a 501c3. As a nonprofit, we are reliant on the kind generosity of our donors. If you are inspired by our mission, we ask you to go to healgrief.org/donations to help us continue our great work. No gift is too small.
You must have experienced so much, I want to say, growth and compassion over your journey, holding the hands of dying patients from what it was, from that 16-year-old girl, to what it is today. I mean, such a growth of compassion.
Well, you know, something that I think is what made me who I am is that I truly should never have been a nurse. I should have been a social worker. And I never worked as a nurse. I got married out of nursing school. I raised a family. I was in my 40s when they were in high school and middle school when I decided I was going to work with hospice. But I thought, well, maybe I'll be a chaplain. Or, you know, I thought about social work, but it was going to take too long to go to school. So I think that my never having worked in the medical field allowed me to have a totally clean slate when I started working with end-of-life issues. Wow. I didn't have the medical model. I had more of a social work, spiritual model that I was coming from. Mm. And hospice in this United States, nobody knew what dying was like. Nope, because nobody was there. So it was being at the bedside for months, right down to the moment of death, that was on the job training through eyes and a mind that had no set agenda. Yeah. So these patients taught me what end of life and dying is like. And that's where Gone From My Sight came from. It was, oh my gosh, there's a process here. People are all dying in a similar manner from either a fast death or a gradual death. There's only two ways to die, and that's gradual or fast. But nobody ever talked about it, not even Elizabeth. Elizabeth talked about you got to have your own house in order, but she didn't talk about how people die. So that I was a clean slate.
Yeah. So, you know, so interestingly enough, I know the little blue book. We utilize that in my work for when I worked in hospice. And indeed, I can't say enough about how families would approach us and say, thank you. Thank you for helping us to see the things we weren't seeing. And to hear you say that you came at it from that clean slate, you witnessed some things and you were able to put that into a publication. When did you first say, you know, we need to write this down? Like we need to write this down. How did that come about?
One night I made an on-call home visit, family called probably 3 o'clock in the morning, and they were scared. And so if you don't go when a family calls you at 3 o'clock in the morning, if you don't go, you're going to find them at 7 o'clock in the morning in the emergency room. I mean, yeah. So that's just how that works. So I'm at this on-call visit. We're sitting in the living room. Mom's in the bedroom. And I'm explaining to the family what is happening, what mom is doing, that she's doing a good job. This is how you die. Nothing bad is happening here. and one of the daughters was taking notes. And I thought, oh, what is wrong with this picture? So that weekend, I went home and wrote my tools that I share with families, what I want families to know. And I just, this is before computers, you know, this was yellow legal pad writing down. And I wrote what I wanted a family to know about the normal, natural way that death occurs. And that evolved over a period of several weeks into the little blue book.
And it's touched millions of lives. It has.
And what's interesting is that I'm a nurse working for a hospice. And so I went to my boss, the administrator, and said, I wrote this. And I was just a primary care nurse. There were only two of us, but probably 15 patients. And I said, I wrote this. And here, look, I'm so excited. And he says, yeah, okay. And I said, well, I want to print it. I want to use it. Fine. I don't care. So I went to Quick Print, actually, and I had it printed, and it was mine. He gave it to me.
Wow.
Yeah. And I looked back, and it was kind of like the universe saying, good job, Barbara. I'm going to take care of you. You do this work, I'll take care of you.
Right. That's a great story.
It really is.
What I love is it wasn't even ambition. It was the need to help guide families. So it wasn't a personal ambition to get this written. It was, I need to do this because something's wrong with the family having to take notes like that. They need to have something in their hands. And to me, it's sort of out of a sense of humility and service, look at this tool. And it is a tool. I mean, our hospice used it as a tool, and I know many hospices do. It's a tool for families, and so helpful when you're there with your person. I was there with my mom. I did not die in hospice. She was in a hospital, but I watched our family as we didn't know what was going on. We were confused and scared and all of those things, and no one really knew how to help us. It's a wonderful gift.
Thank you.
Well, we actually are about out of time, but before we end our time together, I did want to, people who are listening in, they like to know how they can connect with our guests, connect with your work and make those connections. How might they do that?
Well, there's really two ways. One, I have a website where all my materials are on the website, but more than just a place to go to look at my materials. On the website, I write a blog about every week, every 2 weeks. It's on end of life. And people at this point, literally from all over the world, will email me or go to the website and ask me questions or tell me about their situation. And then I answer them. So you can email me at barbara@gmail.com. Or go to the website bkbooks.com and read the blogs. I mean, there's probably hundreds of blogs. It's a source of education that I have out there. And so ask me questions, contact me. That's what I'm here for.
Barbara, that's amazing. Really, your work is such an inspiration. We want to thank you for being a guest here on our show, Let's Talk Death, and really sharing the inspiration of your work, your book, your journey. Thank you.
Oh, it was a pleasure being here and visiting with you both.
If you would like to learn more about Heal Grief, visit us at healgrief.org to find other conversations or to inquire about becoming a guest speaker. Visit us at healgrief.org/Let's Talk Death. And if you feel inspired to support us, remember, no gift is too small. Visit us at healgrief.org/donations, or you can donate right through our homepage. Well, that's it until next time on Let's Talk Death, where we normalize, educate, and demystify the taboo around death, dying, and the journey of grief.